Hi, this is Paul Warne, and you're listening to the Rams Review Podcast.
This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Corey is back with you today. That's me. I'm the one who's talking. I don't know why I referred to myself in third person, but welcome back to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Jason, unfortunately, will not be with you today, so you're stuck with me for the next however long you choose to listen, but hopefully be the full episode because we have plenty of stuff to get to. But yes, I apologize for my absence. I have become somewhat of the James Chester of the podcast, appearing only sporadically in moments such as that. But I'm back now, and I'm not only alone because no one wants to listen to me rat on for 45 minutes, but I've got two esteemed colleagues alongside of me, Derby fan Graham Norton and Derby County journalist Joe Smith. Karen, Joe, welcome back to the podcast. You've both done episodes before with Jason. You've not done them with me before, so it'll be, you know, don't be too disappointed. Don't get your hopes up too much. But Joe, Karen, welcome back to the pod. It's great to have you here.
Be here.
Perfect. Thank you for having me.
So, guys, I want to start with kind of the news that's kind of come out. We'll talk about Stevenage and Steve Evans in a few minutes, but let's talk about something that doesn't have to do with him, and that is Dwight Gale. I think I saw the tweet earlier from Steve Bloomer's Washing. No one's watched this transfer as much with his pictures of his car going down the A6 and the A50 as much as what we did when we started tracking Camille Zuzviek's flight on FlightAware. Joe, I'm going to come to you first, and we'll talk about the needs for Dwight Gale to come in momentarily. Thoughts on the Dwight Gale potential signing, because nothing's confirmed, which normally something happens after we record, like immediately after. There's normally some breaking news, so it'll probably happen. But we know that there's reports that he's picked a squad number, he's trained with the teams. Joe, your thoughts on Dwight Gale's potential signing for the Rams?
First of all, it was obviously a necessity. The injury to Collins is something that nobody really wanted to happen. The lack of business with a centre-forward in the January window obviously meant that a centre-forward needed to be brought in at some point. And I think the Collins injury acted as a catalyst for that. On Gale himself, I think he offers something different to what we currently have on the injury bench. I think we've heard a lot that Waghorn and Washington will be back relatively soon. They both offer completely different things to each other, but I think Gale offers something that they don't in terms of that fox in the box, that sort of creativity, that willingness to drop deep and then make a really late run forward. People have spoken a lot about his lack of goals in the last few years, but he's not played a lot of football. I don't think that'll take away from the fact that he's a natural goal scorer. So I think he'll be a really, really good signing for the club if he does come in.
Kieran, similar sentiments to that. I mean, obviously it's a needed transfer because don't know what was going on. It's easy to sit there and say, don't know what was going on in January. Things shift, players shift around. We have limitations from the EFL and whatnot. But are you excited by the potential of Dwight Gale rocking up with a Pride Park, with a Ram on his chest wearing a Derby kit?
It's hard to say at the moment. After what Joe alluded to there, he's not played a lot of football. And obviously, everyone pulls out his stats, but you can't really go on that based on obviously the amount of football that he's played. Again, like Joe said, he will certainly bring something different. But it's a very different Dwight Gale that we're looking at. I mean, a lot of people probably immediately think sort of his Crystal Palace days and that striker that will play off the shoulder of the centre half and running behind. And I think as he's aged and has the different clubs he's gone to, he's had to adapt his game. I think he will be more of a, he'll be poking around the 6-yard box and drop deep and probably bring other players into the game. You know, now we've got the likes of Mendes Lang and Wilson and Blackett Taylor that can do the running in behind for him. I think he'll be the player to drop deep and possibly just stick around the box for hopefully some nice easy tap-ins. But certainly something different. And obviously with the blow to Collins, something that we definitely need as we go into sort of this important run-in for the rest of the season.
Yeah, if this was FIFA 2015, man, I'd be all over the Dwight Gale sign, and I'll tell you, nothing better than that. And it's kind of like David Nugent, you know, where they're like, "Hey, we tracked David Nugent for a decade, but we finally got him." And it's like, took a decade. It's not the same David Nugent, but yeah, I think, you know, Dwight Gale. You look at his record, and it's easy to sit there, Kieran, and you know, when you say Dwight Gale, there are players that come up in the mind, right? You think goal scorer, Jordan Rhodes, goal scorer. Dwight Gale scored goals, but that was several years ago. So it'll be interesting to see how he adapts into this, because you know what you don't want is you don't want to have to change the team's style of play to adapt to a stopgap player for a period of time and mess up maybe other people who are in form. And I think it's an also interesting point, Kieran, as well, that you and Joe have made, that he hasn't played a lot of football, so we don't know where his, you know, match fitness levels are, let alone his regular fitness levels. And it could be difficult in a tough period of time if you're coming in expecting him to just start banging out 90 minutes and 90 minutes and 90 minutes. That's kind of unrealistic. It might be a couple of weeks before we see Dwight Gale either start a game or play a full 90. And my only concern is that, you know, one, I understand the need for it. We have to get somebody in the door. But two is, how long is that, you know, ramp up period before he can start hitting the ground running? And I'm not saying necessarily hitting the bags of goals in, which would be ideal, but playing in the similar style to what we need, because we cannot afford either another injury to another center forward. We can't afford somebody that takes, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks to kind of get up to speed, because by that point we're in, you know, almost in Easter. And then, you know, that's the men and the boys time, as Billy Davis once said, and the things come thick and fast, and you could really be left behind. But yeah, I mean, for me, I'm kind of excited to see how it kind of goes. I mean, I know Dwight Gale's a little bit older. I mean, he's a little bit old. He's like a year older than me, but yeah, it makes me seem old now. Realize my football career is finished. So no reason, no wonder why Stephen Pierce didn't respond to my video with my highlight tape. You know, you sit there and you think, you know, maybe he can do a similar job to what Jordan Rhodes is doing at Blackpool, where, you know, he can score the occasional goal. Maybe he comes in like Cameron Jerome and scores these kind of big goals, to kind of propel us to where we want to be. But it'll be exciting and interesting to see how he fits in. I'm excited for it. And you know, on the James Caul injury, Joe, it couldn't have really come at a worse time, because Washington and Waghorn have basically been out for what, large swaths of this game, of this season so far. Waghorn's more or less mostly disappeared. I don't know what's going on with his calf. They probably had to grow him a new one or something. And Washington got hurt on, I think it was Northern Ireland duty, and then it's just he's been in training. They seized that video. Remember that video on deadline day where they're like, "Don't worry, guys, Washington's back," and it shows him running, and it's like, okay. Guess we're not getting a striker in, but is he playing? No. So, yeah, the Collins injury, I think, hurts, doesn't it, Joe? Because he was in phenomenal form, and I think he's took a lot of stick from myself included. But you know, he was doing the business this year, and to have that kind of ligament injury out until mid to late April, is obviously a massive blow. A word, real quick, Joe, on James Collins.
As you say, he's not everyone's favorite player, but I don't think you can sort of look past his goal record and the amount of effort he puts in. He's a workhorse. He scores the goals. He creates opportunities for himself as well as other people. So when, you know, we all saw him go down, whether we were watching it on Rams TV or whether you're at St James's Park, it's sort of a real heart in mouth situation. And you think, ah, we don't really have much else here. I think it's really, really important that people don't really forget how important he's been to us this season. Because if we could come back at the end of the season, whatever the outcome may be in May, those 18 goals he scored for us are massive. And without that, we'd be in a completely different position. So I think he needs to be appreciated as he's starting to be by the fans now, and I'm devastated for him.
Kieran, are you similar sentiments to you, and are you disappointed that he might not play again in a Rams shirt if he doesn't get fit in time for the end of the season because the contract's up in summer? Would that be a disappointment, or do you think we maybe go back in for another year, or have we seen the last of James Collins in a Rams shirt?
It's hard to say. I mean, for sure, I'm certainly disappointed. If you'd have asked me that question probably early on in the season, I was probably with a lot of our fan base and thought, "Oh God, not another year of James Collins." But I'll be the first to admit he's completely changed my way of thinking about him. I mean, obviously we'll touch on Saturday shortly, but it showed on Saturday how much we miss that man up top. Just his pressing and his work ethic on and off the ball is something that we've needed for a long time, and we've missed within one game of not him being there. We've seen how much we miss it. So yeah, it will be a huge disappointment that it's more than likely it's going to be the last time he kicks a football for us. forever. Who knows? This season again, who knows? But yeah, hugely disappointing. And let's just hope, obviously, that if we do get Gale across the line, he does the business, because it's certainly needed.
I see it now. I see the t-shirt with Collins's picture at 9 on the back, with him like facing away, and it just says, "Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened." Maybe that's the sentiments that we got to take, but that kind of hurts, And again, mid-April doesn't give you a lot of time to try to get fit again. And normally when you come off a long-term injury, there's a bit of a niggle. So it'll be interesting to see how he's managed back into the team. And if that's a mid-April deadline for him being back in the first team or him being fit to start to train again. It'll be interesting to see. But yeah, again, I wasn't the biggest fan of James Collins, but we were asking for someone to take the mantle up from David McGoldrick, and James Collins kind of did that very quietly and very sneakily. And then you go, wow, that guy's got 18 goals. That came out of nowhere. Maybe this guy does know what he's doing. So yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how that's managed back. But hopefully we get to see James Collins again, firing us either towards the autos or firing us towards the playoffs, and not his last chance in a Derby shirt. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. So as Derby have announced the signing of Dwight Gale, we thought it only appropriate to get some more insights on Dwight Gale. You can, if you prefer to read our insights on Dwight Gale, you can read our blog on our website. But on our podcast right now, we've got Pete Smith. He's the Stoke City reporter for Stoke, for Stoke on Trent Live. Pete, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. Always a pleasure to see Derby in League One. Maybe this will be the year that they get
I hope so. League One football is starting to wear on me, and I think
out.
if we have to do another away trip to Exeter next season, I don't know what I'll do. But yeah, it's grim sometimes, but it's all right. It's a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun. World's most entertaining football club. So Pete, the news broke last night. Obviously, Dwight Gale is signed for Derby County. Surprised that he would drop down to League One level?
No, I'm not. I think he stays in the Championship or higher, probably over. And I think he will have realised that. He will have realised that a long time before he left Stoke, I'm afraid. But his goal record at Stoke, which we know, I'm sure we'll come on to as well, hasn't been very clever. But he wouldn't be the first player to leave the Championship and find a golden touch in a division below. From your own experience, we've seen David McGoldrick do so well. From Stoke's experience, we've seen Sam Vokes, who was one of the worst strikers for Stoke at Championship level, go down to Wycombe Wanderers and be a star. Certainly in his first season there, he scored regularly. I don't think there weren't any blockades when Dwight Gale left Stoke. There were no supporters thinking that he was a striker who was going to end the club's goal woes and keep them in the Championship. But there's hope for Derby that he can rediscover some magic in League One.
Yeah, it harkens back. I think when you get championship players and they drop down to League One, we had David McGoldrick last year. We've got Conor Hourihan. We've had Curtis Nelson do that. Joe Ward's kind of done that, although he was at Peterborough. It was a bit of a yo-yo club. So hopefully the move works out. And Pete, I was thinking back, and I said earlier on the podcast, if this was like FIFA 2015 and I signed Dwight Gale, I'd be over the moon because there are players, Pete, when you hear their names, right? One of them that comes to mind is Jordan Rhodes, right? You think Jordan Rhodes, you think goal scorer. I think Dwight Gale, I think goal scorer. But then when you look at his goal record, like you said there, you hinted at it, 50 appearances for Stoke and there's only 3 goals. I still think of Dwight Gale as a goal scorer. I can't get around it. So what kind of player is Dwight Gale today? Not obviously what he was at Newcastle and Palace years ago. Is he a fox in the box type? Does he hold up play? Does he run into the channels? What kind of, I mean, he's just a guy that like you put it on the 6-yard box, he's going to hit the back of the net. Like what kind of striker is Dwight Gale today that we can expect?
Well, unfortunately for Stoke, he was very much a goal scorer, like you say, in a Jordan Rhodes category. So if they're on the pitch and they're scoring, that's great. That's what they bring to the team. And that's what they're in the team for. And when they're not scoring goals, you're scratching your head and wondering just exactly what he does. And he probably didn't do enough beyond the 3 goals that he scored for Stoke to go down as a positive signing. But the managers always praised him. The different managers that he worked under for his attitude and the way that he could link up play. If you can get players around him, I think he needs that. If you've got players who can buzz around and run his miles for him, be the energy, that he hasn't got in his legs as much these days, then he'll be a different prospect. One of his big problems at Stoke was that Stoke relied on him, particularly in the second half of last year, and where he might have thought at the age of 33 that he could come into the team and play one game in three or just for when he was needed. Alex Neil needed him to play week in, week out. The strikers were few and far between. There weren't many options. And once his legs had gone and he was tired, I wrote in a piece yesterday that he was playing for a lot of matches with the fuel light on. The fuel light was flashing and he didn't have anything left to give. But if you can use him sparingly, use him with that energy around him, as I say, then you'll see a better version of him, I'm sure.
Pete, that I appreciate those insights, but it all sounds rather depressing as our main man, James Collins, is out until mid-April. So he might be playing with the fuel light on for a few more games. Pete, I wanted to talk with you about that because, you know, he was released in early January from Stoke. He played on New Year's Day. He played 10 games in the championship for Stoke this season. They've released him. What would you anticipate his match fitness to be? Because I know you know this covering football. You can't allow a player to come in. It's end of February and have a 2 month, you know, ramp up period to try to get match fit. He doesn't really have a choice at this point of the season. You have to come in, you kind of have to hit the ground running. And it's difficult. Obviously, he was training up until a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure he's been doing fitness work on his own. But where would you estimate his match fitness kind of be to Derby? Is it going to take a couple of weeks for him to get off to speed? Or do you think like he's got enough now so that he can pretty much start on Saturday against Barnsley?
Yeah, you're signing him for his brain and his experience rather than his legs. So I think that's something certainly to take into account. And he only left Stoke probably, less than 3 weeks ago. So it's not like he's been sitting at home and watching television for 6 months. He's been training regularly. He would have been around Stoke's squad for the whole of January. I don't think his fitness will have slipped too much. As I say, he's not at the stage of his career where he's going to play 46 matches in a season, but he is at a stage where he can probably contribute in League One. And he's not going to. He's a really good character. When you have players who don't do very well on the pitch, sometimes it's almost reassuring to think that they're a complete bad egg. But he was. He was a every coach that I spoke to, all his teammates spoke well of his of what he brought to the changing room. And if you put him into a changing room where they're enjoying success at the moment, like they are at Derby, he's not going to rock the boat. He'll help young players develop. He'll take people under his wing. He's been in changing rooms before that have won promotion. He knows what it takes. And if he can score one, two or three goals, then that could be all the difference for Derby and what is an incredibly tight promotion race.
Pete, just real quick, you touched on it a little bit early on, but I'll ask you directly. What are the strengths and weaknesses of this version of Dwight Gayle?
Well, as I say, he knows what it takes to win promotion at various levels. He's been part of successful teams before. He can use his influence on other players. He can link up play well. And what we would like to see from him that we never got to see at Stoke is what would happen to him if he played with confidence. So if all of a sudden he scored a penalty or something went in off his back in the first couple of weeks, or he took a well-taken goal. I mean, that's not beyond the stretch of imagination. And all of a sudden got into a run of form, would you see a different Dyke goal than we got to see in his year and a half at Stoke City? I'm genuinely keeping my fingers crossed for him. I joked about still laughing at Derby in League One because, that's just the ancient rivalry between us. I've got friends who are Derby fans who would expect nothing less. I also know just how grim it can be for a team that gets stuck down there. So I hope that Dwight Gayle does well, does himself well, and you get to have a couple of enjoyable months.
Pete Smith from the Stoke City Reporter from Stoke on Trent. Pete, thanks so much for your insights on Dwight Gayle, and best of luck to Stoke for the rest of the season. And hopefully we can catch up next season back in the championship.
Oh, yeah, back as enemies in the championship. Let's look forward to that.
Turning matters to on the field before we talk about a couple of more players. Joe, Stevenage, Stevenage and Steve Evans kind of rolled into Pride Park, and Steve Evans was talking about how referees need to give him fair shots and all this different things. And I think he did some fist bumping or something like that. And I think he really rubs people up the wrong way, Steve Evans, because he wears a giant sombrero and he's just a strange man. But that's what you get in League One. But Stevenage rolled up and they were in their strange, like, purple and pink kit, which didn't look half bad. And I thought they did okay, to be fair, for large swaths of the game. They frustrated Derby. And obviously Derby ultimately got the winner in the 90th minute, which we'll talk about. But how did you feel Stevenage did at the weekend, Joe? Because I thought they did okay, to be fair. I thought they tried to play the game in the right way and caused Derby a few problems.
Yeah, I think first focusing on us, I think you look at a lot of the sides that come to Pride Park, it is their day out. It is their, you know, our massive chance to play in front of 25, 30,000 fans. So they're going to come and really try and give the best account of themselves that they possibly can. And I think Stevenage are no different. The away game really showed us that they can play some proper football. First and foremost, they set up at Pride Park not looking to lose the game, which I think they eventually did, but I think they defended really well for 60, 70, 80 minutes. We found them hard to break down. Maybe that's because of how we played with our shape and what have you. But they didn't disgrace themselves by any stretch. I think they'll be a hard side to beat for anyone that comes up against them this year. And you know, respect to Steve Evans, as much as people dislike him, he's a motivator. He knows how to set his teams up and he knows how to grind out results when he possibly can.
Yeah, and I mean, I was looking at, I remember when we played Stevenage early in the season, we talked to Matt from one of the Stevenage podcasts, and they were like, Stevenage were fourth at the time. And he was talking to me and they were doing well and they had not expected to be that high on the table because they had just come up from League Two and they thought, oh, well, kind of just a season of struggle really and hopefully to stay above the line. And then, you know, I kind of kept one eye on them since then. And I was very much expecting, you know, things will revert back to the norm, right? Stevenage form will eventually fall off the cliff. They will tank and whatever. And then when they showed up to Pride Park, I was like, wow, those guys are still like, they're like fifth. That's, you know, so there's got to be something about them because they've been in, you know, the top seven or eight all season long. And I would have expected, and I think most people would have expected their form to completely drop off a cliff. But, you know, it's a testament to the job that Steve Evans does. Like you said there, he's not everyone's cup of tea, but he gets results and Stevenage are playing decent football. Kieran, what were your thoughts? What were your thoughts on the match generally before the last, you know, last few minutes there?
Yeah, pretty similar to how sort of Joseph put it, really. They set up well, and I think first and foremost, they didn't want to lose the game. If they wanted to go and nick one, they were probably going to do it that way and stick to the defensive side of the game first. Yeah, it's a typical Steve Evans side, really. Hardworking, set up well, and did the business for large parts of the game. Frustrated us to very little, really. I think there was a comment on Rams TV about how dangerous Derby looked, and I think it was in the 33rd minute, 34th minute, and we'd not had a corner or a shot on target. So that just says it all about how Steve Evans set up, to be fair. Then obviously we saw sort of later on in the game, sort of 75th, 80th minute. They did start to look leggy. There's some tired passes and tired clearances. And he just thought that one moment and we could nick it. And obviously, fortunately, Louis Sibley pops up and does what he does. He loves the last minute equaliser, a winner every 3 years, doesn't he? So, they set up well and a typical sort of Steve Evans side. And I think come the end of the season, they probably will be probably whereabouts where they are now, top six to top seven, which is probably an overachievement. Like you said, they've only just come up from League Two. Whether they can sort of keep that up going into next year, who knows? But yeah, fair play to them.
And Kieran, Lewis Sibley was the player I wanted to talk about, as well as a couple of others, because, you know, he scored the 90th minute winner. And I think everybody really loved the fact that Louis got the goal because he is a fan's favorite. You know, youth academy lad, we know how much potential he has and everything like that. And he pops up with that winner and we're like, wow, this is the Louis Sibley we should be seeing. And I hate to say, but then the moment I saw that goal go in and I had those thoughts, I immediately stopped myself and I said, well, wait a minute, Corey, slow your roll. I have thought this four or five times other periods of time where he scored big goals. And you're like, you know, I think it was Terry Venables quote, you know, we're about to turn the corner, but we don't know where the corner is kind of thing. You know, you think, This is what we need from Louis Sibley. This is our answer. We can play a false nine. He can go up there. He can score a goal. It's on to Louis now, isn't it? Like I probably said this many a time if you go back in the past, but it's on to Louis Sibley now to sit there and think, this is my time in the team. I know he's been playing in a hybrid left back role as well, but as a goal scorer, I need to carry this team forward because the lad's got buckets of potential, but often flatters disease for large chunks of the season and then pops up with a big goal. And then you're thinking, this is the moment, and it continues to happen, doesn't it? This is the period of time now where really Louis Sibley needs to establish himself either as a hybrid fullback or as a number nine, as a false nine, to put the ball in the back of the net. But this is the time where Louis Sibley kind of needs to put this team on the back a little bit and say, you know what, I need to get my finger out here and I need to be a bit more consistent with my performances and go on and kick on.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you nailed it on the head there, to be fair. Like, he's the best way I describe Louis Sibley is he's consistently inconsistent. Because obviously we see moments from him like Saturday, and I think it was Peterborough, last minute winner a couple of seasons ago, that in sort of the relegation battle. And then other games he goes missing for 10, 12 games, and then he's out of the squad completely, and then he comes back in due to an injury and he does all right. And you think, oh, maybe he'll kick on. And, you know, it's just so up and down for him. But that goal on Saturday probably couldn't have come at a better time for him personally, because like you said there, maybe it is time for him maybe to take a step back and go, well, while we're in the position we're in, is this my time to nullify that false nine position and make it mine going into this important run in the season? So, obviously, it'd be interesting to see if he starts or he's on the bench on Saturday. But if I were Louis Sibley, I'd be taking a long, hard look at the next sort of couple of games and really putting some effort in.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, Louis Sibley, this is what is like fourth Derby manager that he's played under, fourth Derby manager, Kaku, Rooney, Rossini, and Warren. Yes, it's been a long time that he's been in around the first team. And you're just thinking, like, he's still young. He's still a young man. But we often think that, you know, he's a lot older than what he is, kind of like a Mason Bennett. You know, that man is still like 28 years old. That dude's been around forever. But, you know, it's a similar thing, right? Louis Sibley, they think, oh, man, this guy's a little bit older than what he is because he's been around so long. But he's still a very, very young player, and people forget that. And, I mean, he does need to start establishing himself because, unfortunately, I think after four managers, if you don't start to establish yourself, he's one of the sellable assets that we have in summer that really, if he doesn't, let's just say he continues on the same vein of form that he has been on, wouldn't really be that big of a miss in summer. So, I mean, if he wants to stay at Derby, it's kind of now or never. Get your finger out, and not to say that his finger is anywhere, but just to say, you know, find a little bit of consistency, put the ball in the back of the net, and find a spot find a space for yourself in this team, because we know he can play at a hybrid fullback. We know he can play on the wing. We know he can play as a nine, as a false nine. We know he can play as a 10 in behind. But we need to find a Louis Sibley-shaped gap consistently in this team. Same thing kind of happened with Jason Knight, where we played Knighty in all these different positions, and Bristol City have stuck him in one position, and they're like, you're just going to do this. And obviously there was a lot of needs must at the times and things like that, but you saw him really excel. I think it would be beneficial for Sibley, wouldn't it, if somebody came in and said, you are going to play this role, only do this, and then if we need an emergency fullback, it will not be you. We will figure that out later. It's kind of now or never, isn't it, Joe, for Louis Sibley to try to get established into this team and to kick his Derby County career on?
It is now or never. I think that's a really, really good comment. I don't think his position will be a false nine, because as of a few minutes ago, Derby tweeted an announcement teaser of Dwight Gayle.
See, I knew that was going to happen. Every time we record, like, bang on, it's going to happen. But continue, Joe. Yes. No, he won't be a false nine because we've signed Dwight Gayle. Continue.
He'd have been my choice to play up on Saturday, to be honest. I think, bar the strength, I think he has a lot of similar qualities to Collins. He'll run after every loose ball. He'll work really hard no matter where he's playing. And he's a good finisher, as we saw. He can't have had many touches before he slotted that one home on Saturday. I think you also made a really good point about he needs someone to come in and say, look, you're going to do this. This is your role. We're not going to take you away from this. You're not going to have a bit part role all over the pitch. Honestly, I don't know where that position is. Especially with all the midfielders we've got coming back at the minute, I don't think he slots in there. If Paul Warren's really insistent on playing that 3/5 at the back with a wing back, Sibley's probably a more attacking option than either Forsyth or Elder. I don't rate Sibley as a wide player in terms of playing off the left or the right. I think if you are going to play him, I'd like to see him in the left wing back role, or maybe a 10 role. But that obviously relies on the balance of the midfield, which at the minute Max Bird's having a really good time of it, playing that sort of 8-10 sort of position. But as you say, it is now or never, and hopefully it's not too little too late, because I can really see Sibley becoming a really, really good quality footballer, both in the third tier and in championship and in the championship. So hopefully he can cement that spot, and hopefully he can be a proper player going forward for us.
And that's the thing, isn't it? He's got so much quality, and we know. And that's the frustrating thing is, like, just if you could just piece that together and maybe take just a little bit more consistency, you would dominate at this level. And just a short word there about Max Bird, Joe. Since his transfer to Bristol City, the lad's been absolutely phenomenal. And it's kind of like, see what you're missing, guys, or whatever. And it was kind of like, Jesus, Max, where was this the last like 18 months? But he's really seemed to kick off. Joe, I want to talk about somebody who shares the same first name as you. And that's Joe Wildsmith, because he's back in goal. He made some fantastic saves against Stevenage, including one with his chest that was very, very good. We know Josh Vickers is out with a thigh injury, and Scott Loach is not going to get a look in. So it's between Vickers and Wildsmith. They both had some decent games, and Joe's got the gloves right now because Josh is injured. Who's your goalkeeper right now, Joe, for the rest of the season? Everybody's, let's just say, Josh Vickers comes back at the beginning of March, everybody's fit. Does Joe Wildsmith keep these gloves till the end of the season, or does Vickers come in after his injury? And who do you prefer in goal? Because it's been a point of contention this season.
I think Wildsmith was probably quite hard done by to have the gloves taken off him at Fleetwood to start with, to be fair. There was that rash challenge at Oxford, obviously, and then a bit of hesitation around the third goal against Peterborough. But I think after everything Wildsmith's done for us in the last 16 to 18 months, or however long he's been at the club, I think he's been a real, real servant for us. And I think probably there's been a lot of comparisons with the prime Scott Carson sort of thing, which I find quite amusing. But yeah, Wildsmith would be my first choice. I think he's really composed. Some of his saves are match winning. You look at Accrington last year when he saved the penalty. You mentioned the two against Stevenage on Saturday, and I think he commands his box really, really well. He catches a lot, whereas Vickers is more prone to a punch. But I also think that the knock-on effect it has for the defenders, I think they are much more confident playing with a Wildsmith at the back. When you look with how Cashin and Nelson play out from the back with Wildsmith, I think they look a lot more comfortable, and it benefits the team a lot more when they have a Wildsmith behind them.
Kieran, similar sentiments, or are you where do you sit on the Josh Vickers, Joe Wildsmith argument?
Yeah, I'm fully in the Wildsmith camp with that one. Like I say, I find it harsh that he had his gloves taken off him in the first place. I know after the Peterborough game with their third, I think Paul Warne hinted at a hand injury, but when you look at the footage back, at no point is there any contact with his hand. I think that was a bit of a cover up, to be honest, just to give Vickers a chance. But yeah, fully in the Wildsmith camp. I think he commands his box better than Vickers. The distribution is better, and I think it just suits our style of play. I mean, we all know we like to make at least 15 passes around the back four before we even think about going forward first, and I think that suits Wildsmith to the ground. Is a better catch with the ball. Commands his box better. I mean, don't get me wrong, Vickers is an okay shot stopper, but I just think our style of play and everything suits Wildsmith a lot better. And obviously, like Joe alluded to there, it must be better for defenders to sort of have consistency behind you and know what to expect from your goalkeeper behind you. So, yeah, for me, it's got to be Wildsmith from now to the end of the season for sure.
I would agree with both of you guys. I think I'm in the Joe Wildsmith camp. Not that Josh Vickers has done anything wrong. Nice enough guy, decent enough goalkeeper. But Joe was hard done by, like we've all said. And I just think he commands it a little bit better. And he's just we just look better when he's back there. And I think he's just overall a better goalkeeper. I know Josh Vickers is also a very good goalkeeper. They're both better than me, but I think on the small margins, finite, and when you have to go to, let's say, a must-win game, it's got to be Joe Wildsmith in the thing. So it'll be interesting to see when Vickers gets back, who kind of keep those gloves. But I wanted to have that conversation for a while, and I decided to have that right now. Kieran, another player that played pretty well on Saturday, Sonny Bradley, who came into much of Plum, we thought, oh my God, look who we've signed here. It's like, you know, the reincarnation of the, you know, the championship Sergio Ramos. And he kind of came in and he just was not at the races in the first half of the season. And I'm sure there's various different reasons for that. I don't know whether he looked interested at periods of time. I kind of thought he didn't look interested for periods of time and whatnot. He was kind of out of this team. But he came in and he basically, obviously very small sample size here, but it was his, by far his best game in a Derby County shirt. He saved an absolute certain goal on the line with a goal line clearance, and he was absolutely five-star at the back. Thoughts on Sonny Bradley's performance on Saturday, and do you see him now, do you see Warren now, because of that performance, changing to the back three because Bradley's a little bit more settled, or do we revert back to the back four, which has been the best defense in the league so far?
It's certainly a difficult one, isn't it? I thought, like you said there, he was immense on Saturday. I mean, when we first signed him, he was just some cameo sub appearances, and every time he came on and we sort of changed the shape, it was mistake after mistake after mistake, and we thought, what are we doing with this guy? But he's looked a lot more settled, and his performances are sort of showing that in his the more he plays as well. Like Saturday, he won absolutely everything in the air. He won his duels. Like you said there, he cleared that certain goal off the line for us, ultimately helps us go on to win the game. So going into Saturday, it's a funny one, isn't it? Just one performance out of the whole season sort of give Paul Warren that headache to make that decision? Probably not, because we know that back four has done so well for us for a longer period of time. But it's certainly something to consider when we need to change the shape. If the game isn't going our way at 1-0, 0-0, and we need to do change the shape, it's certainly something for him to consider. But yeah, I thought he was immense, and long so it continues.
Joe, similar sentiments to that. Do you see us sticking with the back five now that we've kind of got, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of mentality? Or do we revert back to the traditional back four where, you know, like I said, we have been the best defense in the league. So, and we have struggled at times with the back five. Do you see Sonny Bradley staying in the team, not only for Saturday, but for the next few games? Or do you see us reverting automatically back to that back four?
I referred to it in a tweet after the game on Saturday. I sort of highlighted Bradley and thought, like, it's the centre half we thought we'd signed, as you alluded to. I think he looked really, really proper. Whether we stick with the 3-5-4, whichever way you want to talk about it, I'm not sure. I'd like to see us be more on the front foot at home, which I think a 4 probably favours a bit more. We have a lot of possession. Teams like Stevenage sit back, as we've already said. But I'd like to see us dominate. I don't know whether Sonny Bradley's included in that best two at the back. You can't really break up the Cashin and Nelson partnership. I also think it depends on the balance of the side. I think in the first half on Saturday, we looked quite overrun in midfield with just the two of Adams and Bird, which obviously happened because of the 5 at the back. But also it depends on the fullbacks we've got available. I think if Forsyth is available and fit enough to play a real part in the running, I think he probably comes back in at left back and adds a bit more defensive stability, which probably favours more of a 4 at the back. But also the right back, I think Kane Wilson may struggle to get in the side if we go to a 4 at the back, which is harsh because we've all seen his quality and he's certainly an entertaining player to watch. But I'm not sure. I've always been of the persuasion that you should pick your best team to win that game. You shouldn't stay with an unchanged side just because you've won a game. And I think that's really important, especially in a league like this where opponents, tactics can vary week to week. And also the quality of the pitches and stuff that you play on. Some are tiny, some are bigger. So I'd like to see us be a bit more, you know, adapt a bit more. I think now that we've got a striker in Gale, that it may offer the wingers a bit of a different way of playing, which may also lend its way back throughout the 11. But if you were to ask me and push me for an answer, I'd probably prefer to play a back four with a 3-man midfield. I think it's, you know, the best form of defence is attack, and I think having that stability alongside the wingers and the new striker that we've got renders a really nice balance for the rest of the season and the run in against, you know, because we don't have easy fixtures. We've got Barnsley this Saturday, Portsmouth, Bolton all still to play. They're no mugs. They're going to be hard to beat. But I think if we'd set up that way, I think that's probably our best way of doing it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree, Joe. I think having that extra man in midfield is crucial to be able to dominate and dictate play. And especially at home, you want to play on the front foot. You want to play attacking football. And I think, you know, we've got the best defense in the league. Cashin and Nelson have been, you know, immense at the back as that solid force at the back. Got Wildsmith back there. Why go ahead and change something now with a few games to go? Because Sonny Bradley, you know, and like Kieran said, you know, you can bring Bradley on. You know, you have that option to do that. But I think having that extra man in midfield will be crucial, especially with the form that Adams has been in, with the form that Bird's been in. It's going to allow, you know, either an extra creative player, an extra midfielder in there to dominate and to dictate the play, which I think will be massive for us. Because like you said, we've got some pretty big games coming up, which we're going to discuss in our next segment. For me, you got to have that extra man in midfield. Keep the four at the back. Everybody seems to know their jobs. We tried to play the five earlier this season. It didn't really work out, I think, the way that we had wanted it to. Why, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And like Kieran said there, you have an option now that Sonny Bradley's rolling into form. He just has to find that consistently, because then he can make more appearances off the bench. We can switch to a back five when we're, you know, a goal up or two up and we need to kind of close a game out or change something. We have those options. So it's a good problem for Paul Warren to have. And it's good that we're having these conversations, because we have selection dilemmas all over the field, which probably other parts of the season we haven't necessarily had. So it'll be really interesting. But what we'll go ahead and do now, I spoke earlier with Carlo from the Reds Report, and we'll get a Barnsley perspective ahead of this weekend's game. We're going to go ahead now and turn our attentions to the weekend's game as Derby visit Oakwell and Barnsley in a game that's very important for both teams. And joining me to talk all things Barnsley, to talk about teams like Barnsley, is our friend from the Reds Report, Carlo. Carlo, welcome back to the podcast. It's been you've been on before. It's been a while, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. I was thinking, was it this time last year? Because we met a similar time last season around this time of year. So yeah, very much looking forward to it, mate.
So Carlo, walk me through Barnsley. They currently sit in fourth ahead of the weekend's game. They played one game less than Derby. They've got 60 points, six behind Derby. Happy with the season so far, and what are the expectations? Do you think you guys can go for the automatics, or is it? I know there's still a lot of football left to be played, but are you happy where Barnsley are sitting right now in the table? And do you think the automatics are a realistic proposition for how the squad and the 30 games you've seen so far?
And if you have asked us after we lost out of promotion in the 93rd minute against that other team from Sheffield, I think the main aim was to keep the squad together and go again and go one better. But you have to then realise 2-3 weeks after we lost out of promotion, the head coach goes, the goalkeeper goes, your back three go. So whilst there are still a lot of players you will recognise from last season, it's a whole new defence, it's a new goalkeeper. A coach brought in from your part of the world. And Neil Collins, yeah. Listen, I'm ecstatic of what we are. If we had a criticism, I'd love us to have a little bit more identity, that pressing football where everybody got to almost love us for last season. But you know what? It's all about points and not always about performance. So it's not always pretty. But to sit in fourth, you'd have to say, as a Barnsley fan, you know, the playoffs is a must. But, you know, automatics are not beyond us as yet, are they?
Yeah, and I agree, Carlo. You know, I don't think a lot of Derby fans are enamored with the style of Paul Warren, probably myself being included. But at the bottom line, when I look at the results at 5 o'clock on a Saturday, I like to see Derby in the win column, and that's really, generally, to be honest with you, all frankly I care about. The style is all well and nice, and yes, sometimes it's ugly and whatever. But you know, being second in the league and playing ugly football, that's fine, and I'm sure you feel the same way with Barnsley. As long as you're winning, who really cares?
You know, points can get you promotion. Good performances get you maybe a few more fans, armchair fans that say, "Oh, that's a lovely style of football." But I think for us, it was all about it. It's about the 3 points when when the referee blows his full time whistle, isn't it? That's all that matters.
So, Carlo, there are three players that really preparing for this that I'm kind of focusing on here. And I'm hoping that you're going to tell me there's a couple other ones, but there's three big ones that kind of stand out to me because I remember them from the championship season at Barnsley. And that's the two, you know, midfielder Herbie Kane, forward Devontae Cole, and forward Callum Stiles. And I'm, you know, kind of still surprised Callum Stiles is at the football club, because I think he was a left back last time when he was in the championship, and he was a phenomenal player. Talk me about those three players, and if it's not one of them, who's the man to watch for Barnsley?
So Callum Stiles has joined Sunderland on loan.
Okay, he's gone then. Season.
Yeah, he's gone.
Fair enough, my notes. I gotta check Wikipedia from time to time.
It's all right. And Devontae Cole, yeah, one of the top scorers in the division. Criticism from people sometimes is that you only see him when he scores a goal. He's a striker, isn't he? Like, that's fine. Keep banging him in, son. Absolutely fine. Does work really, really hard. Herbie Kane, I think Herbie Kane sometimes goes unnoticed. You know, you'd love him to get a few more goals, but he does the hard work in the middle of the park. I think the key battle for us, and for you, I think, as well, is going to be in midfield. And probably likely with the battle between the two Irish stallions of Conor Hourihan and Luke O'Connell for us. Hourihan, we know what he's capable of, because he did it for us when in that season we went to Wembley twice, won twice and got promotion. Luke O'Connell, unlucky, was ill earlier on in the season. But when he plays, you see a different Barnsley. He is like, I want to say like a Yorkshire Terrier. He is constantly breaking stuff up. And what he does well is, if he gets possession of the ball, it's not just hoof it forward. He's got a really, really good pass in him. And that is what people like Devontae Cole, maybe Sam Cosgrove up front, or whoever plays up front, is waiting for. So I think Luke O'Connell, Herbie Kane and Devontae Cole, yeah, probably the key ones. The goalkeeper, fantastic goalkeeper on loan for Middlesbrough for the season, Liam Roberts.
Carlo, talk to me about manager Neil Collins, because in preparation for this, you're right, he came from my side of the pond, and he was the manager of the Tampa Bay Rowdies, which back in the 70s and 80s was a massive NASL team. But since that league kind of collapsed and MLS has kind of formed up, the Tampa Bay Rowdies are not in MLS. They're in the, I would say, second tier, but America doesn't have a second tier. So they're in another, for the uninitiated, they're essentially in another football league called the USL, which is essentially like the second tier to MLS, although there's no promotion and relegation. Very story podcast for another time. But when you see, oh, he's the coach of the Tampa Bay Rowdies, really, when you look at some of the quality of the teams in the USL, it's not ideal. And he's kind of an unknown, really. And he had a great playing career in England or whatever, but as a manager, how have you made out of Neil Collins? Obviously, you're fourth, so he has to be doing something right. How does a Neil Collins team like to set up? Is this the prototypical, stereotypical Barnsley that we expect to kind of play rough and tumble with a bit of a long ball? How does Neil Collins like to set up what we can expect from this Barnsley side at weekend?
I think he was brought in for his knowledge of, especially sort of like League One Championship football, more for his playing career and a good coaching career. But I think level-wise, completely agree, hard to compare. Three at the back, I think big emphasis on the two wing-backs. Down the left, likely to be Nicky Kedden. Down the right, more than likely, the club captain, Jordan Williams. And not so much pressing as we did before. I think there are certain triggers in play when people like, you know, McAtee, Cole will really move up and try and force the opponent into a mistake. But we still haven't really decided what playing style. I think because he took over in what essentially, like I said, you know, a new look team with loads of new players coming in and loads leaving, I think he had to steady the ship and get points on the board before maybe developing a unique Collins DNA or way of playing. I think what he has shown is, especially in the last couple of months, is that we can win dirty. We played Fleetwood away on Saturday. I mean, the pitch, there's a park half an hour away from here, and that pitch would be better than the Fleetwood pitch. And I know conditions aren't great, at the seaside, lots of water, rain, blah, blah, blah. But sometimes we sometimes rely on quick passing and creating spaces. And on the pitch there, that wasn't possible. But we ground out a result, a 2-1 win. And in many, many games, we've gone 1-0 down and we've turned it around and ended up winning. And I think that's maybe not a DNA or a style of play, but that's something he's installed into the players, that we play until the 95th, 96th or 97th minute. And while ever we're still playing, there's a chance to score a goal. But there is no, I can't say, well, plan A is this, plan B is that, because I think we're still working out exactly. I think he's working out his best 11, because there's been a lot of injuries, transfer period windows just closed. But they are working incredibly hard for him. And when those players work hard, they get results.
Yeah, it must be great to see, Carlo, you know, players who shifted, right, and really want to fight for the shirt. I know Derby for several seasons have been seeming like a soft touch because you paid big wages and probably didn't hold players to account of probably what we should have. But now you're starting to see that fight coming back in. And like you say, you know, even if you're not playing good football or it's ugly or you don't really know what plan A, B, C, D, Z is, you know, at the end of the day, you put wins on the board and you get points on the board and that's how you can move forward. But it must be pleasing to see that there's that grit and determination that we're always going to try to get a goal. And I think as a supporter, you must feel pleased with that, you know, Barnsley aren't going to just, you know, roll over and have somebody tickle their tummies. Even if they're three down, they're still going to try to get a goal. They're still trying to get a push. And if they're three up, they're still trying to get another goal. And that's what you want as a fan, isn't it? That excitement in the attack in third.
Yeah. And I think the one difference this season, which we cannot explain, and we've tried every week on our podcast, is the home form is very different than the away form. Our away, all season, we've only lost one away match. At home, that record, although we've won quite a few lately, so, you know, it's still... But it's the same players. It's the same game of football, 90 minutes, and you swap halves, you know, after the break. And so... I don't know if it's pressure they feel from the fans. I think what the club's done really well, and they did it last year, if you remember, when it sort of starts a little bit, when it gets interesting, the business end of the season, they again called for a scarf day, which we did last season against Shaw. I think in the main stand behind the goal, so like the home end, there's only like 100 tickets left. So it should be, I know you've sold out again, which in fairness, Derby always do. So there should be an incredible atmosphere. And rather than fans saying, we need to see something on the pitch that gets us going and screaming and shouting and clapping and everything else, I think what they said is we're going to create an atmosphere that our team will respond to. And we're going to try and drown out the noise coming from the away supporters because this is a 4,900, I think, of all tickets. So that's standard to that. So it'll be interesting. And I see this as still one of the, you know, it's a big test, isn't it? It's a big test, not only where we are at the table. I did some homework earlier on. Whatever form table you look at, if you look at the last four away games from Derby, because you're away, you've won four, drew one, lost one. Barnsley's last four home games, won four, drew one, lost one. Goals against and goals for, very, very, very similar. The only difference is Derby have had a lot more wins to nil, 1-0, 2-0. If you're a betting man, and you want to make some money, always bet on both teams to score when you play Barnsley. Because even whether it's Fleetwood or whoever we play, they always seem to get a goal. So it's going to be interesting. And I think the fans will I've got a job on. I think they need to take that responsibility of cheering the team on, hoping that they can respond and show the home fans that form we've shown away all season, we can show at home as well.
How's the pitch at Oakwell looking, Carlo? I know you talked about the Fleetwood pitch, and we know sometimes the pitches in League One are probably not the best. How's the pitch in Oakwell looking, shaping up for the game? Is it going to be a pigsty, or obviously it's not going to be a putting green, somewhere in between?
We have got undersoil heating and drainage, obviously. So, in fairness, every time I go, the groundsmen never get any recognition, do they? You know, the kit man washes everything and the physio looks after them and they've pulled the muscle. But it still looks, really, really good. We've had a mild winter, I suppose. There's not been much snow, although it rains quite a lot. So, yeah, if we're not going to do a Steve Evans, that if we lose, we're not going to blame the pitch, or we're not going to, you know, blame the referee. Pitch is looking good. And I think because we've got two teams that like to play football, that will just add to it.
So, Carl, like we said at the top, you know, Derby second, Barnsley fourth. You talked about the corresponding, almost mirror images of one another, home form and away form of the two teams. How do you see this game going from both sides? Because it is a big game. Both Derby have Bolton and Portsmouth to play, I believe. Barnsley have Bolton and Portsmouth to play as well. Yep. So, you know, it is the business end of the season we're coming to. There are some big games left, but but this is kind of the first big game of the rest of the season for both of these teams in terms of teams that are in and around the playoff hunt. How do you see this game going?
I think for the neutral fan, this should be televised, because we know from experience that Derby have got a style of play. They like to play on the floor. They play good football. Let's face it. I think from a Barnsley point of view, I think there'll be goals. I think it'll be it could be one of those matches where there's loads of chances, but maybe not many goals. And I said on our pod yesterday, you know, you look at this, you look at playing second in the league. I believe you had, is it your key goal scorer? Is he injured? Is Collins injured?
Yeah, James Collins looks like he's going to be out to mid-April. And right. Derby are trying to get 34-year-old Dwight Gale in the door ahead of the game. But again, you don't know the match fitness and things like that. But yeah, James Collins will be out till April. So, you know, we as of right now, as of time of recording, we don't have a recognized fit center forward. That might change as soon as we're done here, because that normally what happens when we record, we get news. But, you know, hopefully we have Dwight Gale for the weekend. But like you say, yeah, James Collins, who's kind of that focal point, he will not be partaking at Barnsley, which is unfortunate for us.
Yeah. And I think from a Barnsley point of view, I think, because he is one of those players that always scores against us. and whilst I wish him, of course, a speedy recovery, I think it's going to be a really good advertisement for League One football. Two teams that like to play football, I call it like the old-fashioned way. I think there will be goals. But it's very hard, I think, to choose an outright winner. I think if one of the teams going to win it, I think it's going to be with a goal in it. Whether that be 2-1, 3-2. I said 3-2 yesterday on our pod. It's always one of those matches that I can't wait for the whistle to blow and to start, because the nerves beforehand, when you look at the team, you look at some of the players that you've got, you think, can we do that? I looked at your squad earlier. There's still a lot of names that people just know of being really good Championship or League One footballers. You look at ours. Yes, we've got Herbie Kane playing. But I think if you ask any other fan, name, five Barnsley players. Last year was different, because people always mentioned Kitchen at the back and Mads Andersen at the back and Bobby Thomas. And I think it's different now. But it's going to be, it's going to be, I think this is the match that everybody looks forward to. And with so much at stake, it just adds to the excitement to me.
And Carlo, one question before we go, and I probably should have asked this earlier, so this is a little bit out of order. If Barnsley don't go up this season, is it the end of the world, or is it kind of a free hit in a way to allow Neil Collins a go next year to try to get this squad up, right? With however the league shakes out, or is if he doesn't get him up, is he going to get sacked?
I don't think he'll get sacked. I think one of the problems Barnsley have had for a long time now is a lack of a long-term plan. So owners are great going on television and saying, you know, we want to be in the Premier League in 5, 6, 7, 8 years' time. But if you look how many managers we've had, I think over the last five seasons, we've had five different managers. So if he doesn't make it, you need to keep him, because he needs to have an influence over what players we bring in, what he needs. And there needs to be an identity for them. If you manage Barnsley FC, like we did under Ismael, like we did under Standal, like we did under Duff last season, there was a brand of football almost that was recognisable. And when you saw it, said, that's Barnsley. That's missing a bit this year. I fully expect us to get in the mix for the playoffs. If he doesn't, I think, and it's easier said than done, I think you need to look at what he started with, which was a team depleted of stars. We brought a lot of players in that's never played in this division before. So rather than criticising him, I think you need to compliment him on getting so far, at least. I think the worst season you can have is finishing 10th or 12th, because you're never really in any danger of relegation, but you're not going to make the top, and it becomes a season that's sort of like, not pointless or useless, but it's always great to have something to play for. We've got that. We're in a good position. They shouldn't sack him, because you're never going to get... If you look at some of the managers, if you look at Warne when he was Rotherham, you know, when they got relegated, but then he brought them back up. As part of a long-term plan, you need to have that steady influence of a head coach that doesn't get sacked after one bad season.
Fair enough, Carlo. Carlo from the Reds Report. Carlo, thanks for spending the last, few minutes with me chatting Barnsley. we have the we me and you have that inside joke, teams like Barnsley roll up and whatever. But you know, thanks for spending a few minutes to chat about Barnsley ahead of the weekend. I'm looking forward to the game. I think it'll be a nice matchup. You know, two teams at the top end of the table that, like you say, like to play good football, and it'll be interesting to see how the mirrored form of home and away kind of work against each other. And like you say, you can take that pretty much to the bank that it will be that both sides will score. And so bang on now for a 0-0, just to have a laugh. But Carlo, thanks so much for spending the last few minutes with me, and all the best for the rest of the season, just not for Saturday.
Thanks, and ditto for you. Good luck, Derby, not Saturday, though.
So our thanks to Carlo and the Reds report there. So Joe, Kieran, let's turn our attentions to next Saturday, as we talked about last Saturday in quite a lot of detail. I said to Carlo there, Kieran, that this is kind of the beginning of the end of the season. And I know that's kind of easy to say because it's the next game and whatever. But when you look, Barnsley are in fourth, Derby are in second. This is a very, very big game at League One level. Both Barnsley and Derby have Bolton and Portsmouth to play. I know Portsmouth have kind of been in kind of strange form recently, but they are still leading the division. This is a massive game, isn't it, Kieran? And it's a big statement for either team to go in there to try to win. And it can really catapult you for the rest of the season, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. It, like you said, it puts out a huge statement, not just to Barnsley, but probably to the rest of the teams in and around us that were serious about this playoff campaign. I mean, like you said, they've all got each other to play. So the importance of creating those gaps between sort of Barnsley, Bolton and now Peterborough is so, so important, especially with the run-in. So I know we have an absolutely rotten record away at Barnsley, so I'm hoping we'll be okay. But yeah, huge game, and the potential is part of a massive statement to the teams around us.
Joe, similar sentiments, because both Barnsley and Derby have to play the Bolton and Portsmouth as well. So there's kind of a mini league going on. It is a big game, isn't it, Joe? It's very important. Derby have to go to Oakwell. They have to play well, and they have to, well, whether they play well or not, it they're hell bent. They've got to get 3 points at the end of the day, don't they? Come 5 o'clock on Saturday.
They do. I mean, Neil Collins has got them playing some pretty good football, as you both alluded to. Our record there is pretty shoddy in the last few years. I don't think we've won there in four, which, you know, for sides that have both been League One and Championship recently, it's quite alarming that we've not been able to put a run together there. Obviously, really important that we've got the best part of 5,000 away fans going. That'll be massive, massive spur on the team. As I touched on previously, though, I think it's really important to set out the best side to win that game. Don't stoop to Barnsley's level because we're playing away from home. And I think, fortunately, for the first time in a few seasons, Derby fans can be confident that we play better away from home than we do at Prague Park, because I don't think there's as much pressure on us away from home. We can sort of be the underdogs at an away ground rather than rely on the comfortability of Prague Park, if that makes sense. So I don't think we need to be worried. You see a lot of the sort of pessimism going on. Would you take a point? Would you take a point? Personally, no, because I think you've got to beat the sides in and around you if you want to be there or thereabouts come the end of the season. But I think Barnsley have only won two of the last five. So I think if we're going to take them on, I think now's the perfect time to do that. And I'm backers for 3 points on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and Barnsley's not been in great home form. Derby's been in great away form, and their records home and away for each individual team kind of mirror one another. So, you know, it will be really interesting. I know Carlo said there in the clip that it's kind of like a special game for Barnsley. Like, they're all going to, the main stand behind Oakwell is going to be all, they're all going to be standing and singing and like raising scarves. So they're expecting an intimidating atmosphere from a Barnsley perspective. But I think, you know, Joe, it's an interesting thing. Like you said there, you know, for years, Derby have not traveled well, especially in London. This is well documented, and we've always excellent at home. But the script is kind of switched here. And I think it's an interesting dilemma, right? Because you can sit there, why do we play better away? Maybe the less expectation, right? Maybe there's less expectation away because there's only 4,000 Derby fans instead of 35,000 Derby fans, right? Maybe the players feel something different. Maybe they feel a little bit more freedom, you know, but we have to go out there. We have to win the game. And And we have to put a marker down because, like you said, Joe, if we want to be where we want to be at the end of the season, we have to beat those teams that are either, you know, there's only one team above us, so we're going to have to beat them. But we have to beat those teams that are in the chase and pack as well for that second position. We played a couple games more, which is good. I'd rather have the points on the board than the games in hand. But you know, it's going to be such an interesting game. It's going to be such an interesting run in. And you know, guys, I was going to sit here. I had in my notes. I was going to ask you guys your predictions for the rest of the season. But again, you don't talk about Fight Club. That's the number one rule. So I don't do that because I just feel like, just like when I watch Derby on TV or I go to the game, I never wear a shirt because I always feel like if I wear the shirt, I'm going to be the guy that causes them to lose. Like, I'm never going to do it. Like, literally, I was wearing my shirt when we played Burton and I was watching on TV and we were losing. And then I took my shirt off and boom, it was fine. Like, it's fine. I mean, I had a shirt on. I didn't go shirtless. Okay. Clarification here. I had another shirt on. It just was not the one with the Ram on it. But yeah, so it's just going to be so interesting. And I think, Joe, you know, we have to go and we have to win games between now and the end of the season. And, you know, those big three games that we have coming up with Bolton, Portsmouth and Barnsley, and it starts on Saturday. And Kieran, you know, honestly, at this point, I know a lot has been talked about with Paul Warren and his style. I'm honestly in the camp of, I really don't care how we play right now. I just want to have 3 points. Do you share similar sentiments to that? Are you going to be disappointed if we play like crap and we win, or are you going to be more pleased if we kind of get a draw and play well? How does it shake out for you?
100%, I'm in agreement with you. At the end of the day, it's a results business. I could not honestly care less if I have to watch an absolute snooze fest for 89 minutes and then we go and win 1-0. I could not care less. If there's 3 points on the board come 5 o'clock, really not bothered. I mean, I've seen people in utter like meltdown on Twitter over the way we played, yet we won. It's like you can't please some people, and it's a really strange take. Like I said, it's a results business. We're there to win games. Yeah, obviously it's a bonus if it's entertaining enough, some people pay a lot of money to come and see us and travel. I get that part of it, but the be all and end all is you've travelled and you've paid to watch Derby win. How we do it and the way we do it shouldn't really matter. The fact is that we do it. So 100%. As long as we get 3 points, I'm not really fussed how we play.
See, Kieran, I came in October. I flew over. I went to Cheltenham. They hadn't scored a goal. They score. Derby walk away with a point. I was happy as a clam. I didn't care that we played like garbage. I didn't really care that Cheltenham played like garbage. I just thoroughly enjoyed the fact that we got some points on the board and didn't lose that game. So, yeah, it doesn't matter where you come from. At the end of the day, it's all about 3 points. Joe, do you share the same sentiments as that? Or are you going to debate me on this, that it's better to have style points than points on the board?
I think it's a really tricky one. I'm not doubting in any way, shape or form that, you know, I'd rather us drop points and play well. It's a results business, as Kieran said, and winning games is massive, especially in this league. I do have my doubts about how this style of football may go in the Championship. Paul Warren's got a great record of getting out of this league. That's well documented. But what's also well documented is that his record in the Championship is not particularly great. I'm not paid enough to make that decision on whether he stays or goes at the end of the season, whatever the result may be. But I think the main thing for the club is getting out of this league. And I think at the minute, Paul Warren's the right man to do that. The style of play may not be easy on the eye. If people don't want to watch it, they don't have to. We go every week because we love it. We want to watch our side win. But yeah, as I say, the most important thing is getting out of this league. And I think with the way we are picking points up, I mean, what did they say about, you know, good sides? You win when you play badly. And I think that's really important. And I think now that we've got more firepower in through the door now up front in Dwight Gayle, I think that will naturally spur on the squad, the fans. It will give them that extra boost that they need. But going back to your point about, you know, do they feel less pressure away from home? I spoke to Sonny Bradley after the Bradford Cup game when we lost, and he said, you know, there should be no pressure on us wherever we go because players shouldn't feel that. And I'm inclined to agree with him, but I think it is just something that naturally happens. Whether you play in front of your fans, you know that if you don't entertain, you are going to be told that. Whereas if you go away from home, you have the same core of fans that go every week, you know, the away members and what have you, that will go no matter what, no matter where. So, yeah, I'm confident. I think the players will be confident. I think Paul Warne especially will be confident because he's got to back himself with the record that he's got of getting out of this league. It's just when it comes to the summer, then it may be time to reevaluate and see, you know, what is the best option.
And that's exactly what I was going to say, Joe. You summed it up perfectly. You know, it's not everybody's cup of tea. It's probably not mine, but I like winning. And it might not be the medium or long-term future of Derby County, but it's the short-term future. And I love talking with you chaps on the podcast, but I really don't want to be talking about another League One game next season with you guys. Like, honestly, I'm so done with this league. I think whatever it takes to get out of this league, I don't care if you have to sell your house or whatever. You know what I mean? They have to sleep in the, I don't care. Get out of this division, and then we can, you know, assess in the summer what the strategic vision of this club is going forward. And you know, who's the right man or the wrong man at the helm, and where, what player personnel. But right now, you've just got to go in there. You've got to beat who's in front of you. However you're doing it, it doesn't really matter. I don't really care if it comes off of someone's, you know, backside in the 75th minute and it's a complete snooze fest and there's a goal. I don't care. I just want Derby to walk away with 3 points and I want to get out this league. And it starts with a big game against Barnsley on Saturday. We've been in good form. We should be confident. I would normally ask you gents for a score prediction, but again, I don't like to talk about Fight Club, so we're not going to do that. You know, Kieran, Joe, thank you very much for your time this evening. I've had a good time. I hopefully have not, you know, let the side down. I know you're used to talking to Jason and things like that, but you know, hopefully we can do this again, you know, in the future, and, you know, continue to talk about the good vibes. Good vibes hopefully continue to roll in, and it starts with against Oakwell, at Oakwell on Saturday. But Joe Smith, Kieran Norton, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Before we leave this week, our thanks go out to Joe, Kieran, for joining Corey. Corey, it's great to hear you behind the mic again. Thank you very much for helping me out this week, mate. And to wrap up the podcast, we've got Jack Bryan, who's going to round up Derby Women's and concentrate on the trip to tabletopping Newcastle United. Thanks for listening to the Rams Review. And as always, up the Rams.
Following their 3-0 win at home to Huddersfield Town a week earlier, on Sunday, the Utes were on the road. Sam Griffiths' side travelled up north to face league leaders Newcastle United, and with the Magpies the only full-time outfit in the Women's National League North, Derby were in for one of their toughest tests of the season. Newcastle were in front after 8 minutes, Beth Lumsden opening the scoring with a low drive into the bottom left corner from the inside right channel. Charlotte Steggles had Derby's first chance of the afternoon, getting ahead on the end of Sarah Jackson's free kick, but the save was simple for the keeper. Becky Langley's side would double their advantage in the 27th minute, when Hughes goalkeeper Anna Draper was dispossessed in the box, allowing Paige Bailey-Gale to find the back of the net. Lumsden would go close to a third before the break, her free kick from the right-hand side just too high. Though a second-half change of shape brought improvement for Derby, it was the Magpies who had the first chance, Baby Gale shooting over from 7 yards out. Lumsden would go close to her second once more, this time on the volley, but Sarah Jackson made an excellent block to keep the score at 2-0. Later in the second half, substitute Marley Rose Andrews would force a corner. Her shot from 22 yards out saved well by Donnelly, and Derby would only ramp up the pressure from here. The Ewes won a penalty with 7 minutes to play, a Newcastle player handling the ball sent in from Rebecca May's free kick. It was Eleanor Ashton who would step up, and the striker would tuck the ball away for a 10th goal of the season despite Donnelly going the right way. Rebecca May would aim a free kick from a similar position to her last goalwards, forcing Donnelly to get across the line to palm the ball out for a corner in closing stages, which Kira Rye would agonisingly head over the bar. Sam Griffiths said that there was no disappointment from her at full time, and that she could not fault the girls. After Derby caused their own problems with the second goal, she is delighted with the resilience shown to get back into the game. In her opinion, her side had pushed Newcastle all the way and had shown improvement from the reverse fixture. She said this time felt a bit more even, although she acknowledged that Newcastle could have scored a few more goals. These were sentiments shared by captain Amy Sims, who said post-match that Derby took it to Newcastle in the last 20 minutes and she couldn't fault anyone's work rate. Derby are fifth in the league table with 18 points from 13 games, leaving them 4 points behind 4th place Liverpool Fets, who've played a game more, and a point ahead of 6th place Wolves, who have a game in hand. Newcastle, meanwhile, remain top of the league with 40 points from 15 games, 9 points ahead of 2nd place Nottingham Forest, who have a game in hand on the Magpies. Derby are next in action on Sunday as they travel to Exeter in the semi-finals of the FA Women's National League plates, before Burnley visit the Don Amos Arena for their next league fixture on Sunday, the 3rd of March.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at RamsReview1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast, or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.